Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hey, hey. Welcome back, folks, to the Woody Overton Window. This is Mike Agovino here with my pal Woody. Hey, Woody.
What's up, y'all? Hey, Ago.
Hey, hey, hey. It
ready
is
to lay down the second episode, right?
We're at a big streak now, two in a row. So Monday, June 24th, folks, and we got a lot of stuff going on in the world to talk about. So we're going to do it. But what are you feeling strong? Everything continuing to look up and
feeling well. Everything is progressing as it should be, and you know, just new lease on life, bro. So
awesome, great. awesome. Well, again, if you didn't get a chance to listen to the episode dropped on Saturday of Real Life, Real Crime Original, Woody walks you through exactly what has gone on in his life here over the last month. And he'll wrap it up this coming Saturday. But if you didn't get a chance over the weekend, make sure you go back and listen to that Real Life, Real Crime Original.
And that's, it's, you know, the story is powerful in itself, but it actually, my whole angle on it, and it's the truth, is how the lifers from all over the world and friends that I hadn't talked to in years, and everyone, even the, you know, the Sheriff Jason Ard, got all the my old cop buddies,
you know,
been, you know, well wishing thing. It's just, it's testament to what, you know, what we've built, and how passionate our fans are, and you know, how it works. So y'all check it out if you get a chance.
Was there one moment, Woody, was there a moment that you can pinpoint that was the pivotal moment for that you knew you were going to be okay?
Yes, I can tell you exactly when it was. And I was on so much dope that they were trying to control. I couldn't talk. I couldn't see. But, you know, I had to have lights out and everything else. But I could tell you exactly when it was. They started me on this broad spectrum of antibiotics on Wednesday before they even knew what it was. They knew it was viral, had spinal taps and all this, but they couldn't figure out what it was. But they were growing shit. And the infectious disease doctor they had for Our Lady of the Lake, and she's probably older than me. I've been doing it, you know, as long as I was in law enforcement. But she came back and she said, hey, I got some shit growing in a dish that I've never seen before in my entire history of my career. But I looked it up and she said, if this is what it is, she said, I got to ship it to, I think it was a lab in California. They flew my blood out there. This only lab in the United States of America that even tests for this, what it was. They had me on all this different broad spectrum antibiotics. And then once they confirmed what it was, they adjusted it down, and I'll never forget it. It was Sunday, that it was a Sunday night, and they just gave me another round of morphine and OxyContin at like 9:30 at night. And after that, and then they came back in 2 hours later to give me another round. And I was like, I don't need it, because I, you know, I had turned the corner. everything was beginning to work. And it was to the antibiotics that they had been running me on for, you know, 4 days or 5 days or whatever. And I knew I was going to make it, right? And
were you aware of everything enough to take part in the decision-making about what to do? Or was Cindy driving the bus on that? Or how did it happen?
Cindy never left my side. 8 days in the hospital. I couldn't. You know, I wanted her to leave at some point. So I was like, get the fuck out of the room, right? That but she wouldn't leave me. And that's a testament to her. And she, and it's told in the story, there's lots of things that she did that I really wasn't aware of because, I mean, I couldn't even think. But I was in such bad pain and everything for a long time. And then they were doing all this different shit to me. Hell, I had to have surgery in the middle of it. On a Saturday, they came in and did a surgery on my stomach. And so it was a real shit show, but I'll never forget that Sunday night. And I hate pain medicine, but I had to have it to even be able to, I mean, literally I was on death's door. Then my blood pressure was so low. They were having to pump me just to keep me alive. But that Sunday night it turned, and that Monday morning I told the infectious disease doctor, I said, I want out. And she said, hell no. And then Tuesday I was like, I want out. And, she said, Mr. Overton, you know, I don't think you realize how very sick you were. You almost weren't here for several days. And she said, this is only the second time I've seen your face. Cause every other time I've been in the room, you had it covered. A lot of times when they came in, it was like five different doctors in different fields. Now, I told them to get the fuck out. And I'm like, and Cindy likes to talk, but she was asking the right questions. What I said, y'all need to take this shit out of the room because it was killing me. Every time somebody would talk, it was like they were stabbing me in the head. So a lot of it, I just had to leave the room. Yeah. But
I can't imagine that pain. Was it a different kind of pain than you'd ever felt before? It wasn't like a headache kind of pain.
When I had the trigeminal neuralgia back in 2009, it ended up being a tumor, but it was even much worse than that. The sight, the sound, even there's a lot more to it, but my head hurt so bad. I couldn't even lay on a pillow or whatever, where I felt like I was being stabbed. But then I didn't realize all the other stuff that was going on because this was so bad. And then, you know, the fluids and my congestive heart failure is so much shit, man. And then my stomach bleeding and all that, and throwing up blood but I wasn't even paying attention to all that because I couldn't get past my head. Yeah. So,
but you had an awareness that the blood had been sent to California, that California was doing the test, that what the result was, and then the Army was on the way with the right medication.
Right. Yeah, I did. And I didn't know if it was going to work, but it did. And, you know, I'm thankful for that. And then when I got out, I was on home health care for a week. Bad shit. So, but all good now. And, you know, I've had some, you know, near-death experiences, if you will, like in 2009 when they killed me on the table and stuff like that. But when you come through something like that, man, I have a whole new appreciation for everything. Evidently, God's not done with me yet because I asked him to take me several times and he didn't do it. So, but, you know, I'm back and the wow is, you know, this is our second episode together. And again, thank you for you and AJ Benza for caring me when I was out. But let's roll with it.
One last question before we roll. Is it definitive that it was from that boar hunt and that's
1,000%? And not when I got out, when I came home, I was on home health. The CDC contacted me and wanted to track all the movements. And then the Louisiana State Department of Health infectious department contacted me. And she was like, Woody, it just doesn't happen in my entire history of track. Now it happens with animals all the time. Like if your cow gets what I had, you have to kill the whole herd, right? Animal to animal, very common. from animal to human, unheard of. And there were only two cases in the United States last year that it happened. There's never been a case in the state of Louisiana. So I won the lottery again, but you know,
so what? It's only transmissible if blood comes into contact with blood,
yeah, or? And it's the wild hogs can carry this disease naturally. The pregnant ones, wild hogs, or carry it more. And I did have, you know, open wounds on my hands. I actually have pictures of it, and I'm gonna post that for this weekend, or maybe before next weekend. My hands are just covered in blood from here to here. But I had cut myself. It's common to cut myself on skinning animals and stuff. But I fucking cut the shit out of myself, like down to the bone on that Friday night. And I had it wrapped and it kept bleeding throughout the weekend. And Sunday night before they left, I cleaned like 7 more hogs to 3 in the morning. And it was open again. But, you know, I've been cleaning hogs for 20 plus years and never thought anything like this would happen. My friends would be like, you're not going to wear gloves? I'm like, fuck gloves. I might miss out on giving this animal something. Well, the joke was on me. But
only Woody Overton, folks.
You can't make
only.
All these doctors were coming in the room and they're like, holy fuck, we just want to sue the guy who actually caught this. This is, you know, we've never seen this before. And look,
the doctors want to get a picture with
it. It's a win-win for them. They fucking writing it up, case studies and all this shit on me. And I'm like, yeah, it didn't help me. I'm glad you're going to get to publish something out of it, but I wouldn't do it again. Now I'm fucking paranoid, dude. I'm like, I don't even want to eat like meat and shit, but of course I'm going to do it.
You'll get through that, but I'm sure you are not going to be cleaning any hogs with open wounds as we.
No, actually, my kids ordered me stacks of Kevlar gloves to wear from now on, so I can't cut myself. So,
good. Good work, kids. It's springtime, boys. The grass is green, the birds are chirping, and the kids will be out of school soon. That makes it the perfect time to plan a family vacation. And we know from the stories we cover that this is not exactly the time to take the family to the Caribbean. You don't want to end up in the middle of some cartel drug shootout. So this year, it's time to take an international journey. And of course, a big international trip is just one reason to learn a new language with Rosetta Stone. You might have a different one. Maybe you want to connect with family or friends living overseas. Maybe you want to acquire a new skill for work or better understand a certain culture. Rosetta Stone has helped me have fun with my mother and at least have partial conversations in Italian after only a few lessons.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways, no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. Intuitive process, you pick up a language naturally, designed for long-term retention. Speech recognition, the true accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Rosetta Stone is convenient and an amazing value.
That's right, Woody. A lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Real Life Real Crime and Daily Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Sayonara.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
From a very, very real, epic physical struggle that you had, I want to start today with a story about an epic struggle that I've been a part of for the last six plus years, and that we caught a little bit of a break on in the last couple of days. Don't know how big a break it is, but we shall see. But I have oftentimes on the Daily Show mentioned my involvement in the Penn State scandal and my belief that all of those who were convicted surrounding the Penn State scandal were innocent. That Joe Paterno, who died before he could be convicted of anything, was innocent of covering up any crimes. That the president of the university at the time, Graham Spanier, was innocent. The athletic director and the VP of administration was innocent. And most importantly, that Jerry Sandusky is innocent. In 2000, near the end of the year, I met up with a guy that I had known who had been a talk host on several radio stations around the country and had a great late night talk show. In fact, he was being groomed to replace Rush Limbaugh. He was very much the fast track young conservative talk host in the country. His name is John Ziegler. I went to lunch with John, and John had been off the grid for a period of time. And he let me know that the reason that I hadn't heard him anywhere or seen him anywhere is that he had been in a deep dive as an investigative journalist studying this case. And the reason that he did that was that he, like all of us, was watching the news reports from home, but he had grown up in suburban Philadelphia. He went to Georgetown. He was a Notre Dame fan. He was not a Penn State fan, but he knew very much who Joe Paterno was, as did everybody in Pennsylvania. Joe Paterno is this legendary football coach at Penn State. He had won more games than any other coach in NCAA football history. He graduated 97% of his players. The school had never been up for an NCAA violation. The only other school in the country that had never been put on a violation was Stanford. This program was pristine, and he knew that, and he just couldn't believe that Joe Paterno could possibly be involved in anything like this. And so journalistic, inquisitive nature just drew him to wanting to understand what could have happened to Paterno to where he would do something so out of character, or was the press just getting all of this wrong? And so he got involved with that as his instinct. I don't believe Paterno, from what I know of him, would have been capable of doing anything like this. He assumed Sandusky was guilty, but that this cover-up story around it couldn't be true. And so that's the way he entered the case. And then for 5-6 year period, everywhere he went, the evidence just pointed in a very different direction than the publicly accepted narrative in the case. And so he walked me in a lunch through everything that he had uncovered over time. I believed every word that John said. I knew of John well enough to know his work and respect his work and know the kind of work that he did, which is impeccable work. I knew that if he believed it, it had to be true. And he presented a very, very strong evidence for his case. And so at that point, I dropped everything that I was working on except for the show I do with AJ. And I invested a lot of money personally into producing this series with John, expose the truth of this scandal. And when you're trying to prove a negative, when the entire world accepts that here's a guy, he's a pedophile, he has sexually assaulted 30 some odd kids that were all part of his charity program. If you're going to come out against a story like that, you better have all of the facts, because you're going to need awfully compelling facts to convince people that what they've heard isn't true. And it ultimately took us 60 hours worth of podcast in order to tell the whole story, in order to expose every victim that lied, in order to expose the lawyers that incentivized those people to lie, the therapists that put them through repressed memory therapy in order to get fake stories out of them, the people involved in Pennsylvania government at the time and their selfish motives that drove them to want to get not so much Sandusky, but Paterno and the university president, Graham Spanier. And so that series is called With the Benefit of Hindsight. And there is no one who has gone through at least two episodes, the first two episodes of the series, who isn't convinced by that point that the entire thing is a house of lies. But we hit really bad timing. We decided to make the podcast first, and I had gone, like I said, all in. So I was planning on a documentary series and funding that documentary series and then selling it. We went out with some good friends of mine in LA that are very well connected, and everywhere we went, we got shot down. This was right as the Me Too movement was happening. You have the Catholic Church scandal not that far in the rearview mirror. This was a third rail story to these studios. And it's probably the greatest disappointment of my professional life that we couldn't get any legs for this story. And this story literally ruined John's career as a journalist. He was he was canceled as a journalist for taking the position that he took. And so this week, the Daily Mail did a story, and that story then was picked up by the New York Post. It was picked up by Wall Street Journal, picked up by a lot of other papers across the country. For the first time since all of this got exposed in 2011, the Sandusky Paterno side of this story is being told and seen, and now people are coming in. We generally, because we produced this series back, we released it in 2019. We get maybe 1,000-1,500 people listening to an episode on a daily basis. Had a lot in the beginning, but yesterday after this came out, we hit almost 30,000 in a day, which tells me that that there's some traction with the public right now. And so, look, I encourage anybody who wants to know the truth, has any curiosity, just to go and listen to the first episode of With the Benefit of Hindsight. It's called The Date, and it exposes the first big lie of this entire story, which is the lie the government, the attorney general in Pennsylvania at the time told the public, which was that there was a grad assistant with Penn State that witnessed Jerry Sandusky anally raping a boy in a Penn State shower back in 2001. And that was just plain and simply not true. And the government knew it wasn't true. Yet they came out publicly with that. And so they immediately swung all public opinion toward they'd probably be releasing this publicly if they didn't know it as fact. And what a lot of people don't know is that at trial, it came out that none of that was fact. The only charges for which Sandusky were acquitted were the charges associated with that supposed sodomy of that boy in the shower. And so even at trial, the jury understood that wasn't true. Well, if you understand that the whole basis that this case got launched on was a lie, then why can't you see how all the other lies built on top of it? But anyway, a possibly really significant event. Sandusky is 80 years old now in prison, and probably our last best shot to get this guy a new trial and see justice finally done in this case.
All right. This
Woody's speechless.
I have a lot of thoughts on it. Okay. I appreciate Ziegler for having the balls to step forward and I understand, wrong time and all that. And I'm all about innocent people not being in prison but I'm also all about the justice system. Now, them coming out and acquitting him on the sodomy of the kid in the shower. Great. That's how it's supposed to work. Right. But and we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Yeah. I'm going to say a system of checks and balances. Certainly sometimes it's people are innocent. Right. And if he's innocent, God bless him and get him a new trial and what have you. But those cops didn't wake up one day and just decide, we're going to go investigate Jerry Sandusky. Okay. They had to have something to move forward on. Even if that first one was bullshit, right? That opens the Pandora's box of diving into any possible victims that there are. Now, I get it, just like on the Catholic Church scandal or whatever. Now, look, there's a lot of absolutely 1,000% correct victims. And I know this because I actually worked on one of these cases, but there's also like you said, the lawyers get involved, they want to use repression therapy, they want to do whatever more importantly, they want to sign up as many alleged victims as they can. So you're going to get some that are going to come in that are just shitheads that happen to be an altar boy during that time and they want to make a buck off of it. And the church wants it to go away. And I get that. But back to the Sandusky thing. There's too many, Mike, and I don't know whom or whatever, but these cops didn't just decide, we're going to stick it to them. They get on it, even if it's not fruit of the poisonous tree. Like if you go do a search warrant and your information is bad on a search warrant, anything that you find can't be used. In this case, this guy saying that he was raping a kid in the shower. Well, fuck, it's got to be investigated. When you go to investigate that, then you can look at any more possible victims, any more kids this guy had access to, Sandusky had access to. Well, shit, he had a lot. He had his foundation and they start looking at the different things he did with his kids, bring them to their home and, acting as a parent figure. Well, that's a great thing. If it's totally innocent, but that's also classic pedophile grooming, taking advantage of these kids in a situation, using your position of power and authority, floating little things out there to see if they work and what have you. So they dig in and they find all these alleged victims. And
but that's a big part of what the public doesn't understand is the police interviewed 700 kids
right.
that participated in the second mile.
Right.
Not a single one of the 700 kids said they had ever been touched by Sandusky.
Right.
Nobody, not a single person ever made a contemporaneous accusation against Sandusky. All of this stuff came up in 2011, alleging incidents that occurred supposedly between 1998 and 2004. There's no physical, there was not a single piece of physical evidence in this trial.
Nine times out of ten, there's not physical evidence in especially these child rape cases and when the victims or alleged victims are now adults coming forward. You're not going to have DNA evidence. You're not going to have whatever. If you have eyewitness testimony, even the one guy that got it wrong, they had to interview all 700 kids. You know why? Because the defense attorney would be like, well, you cherry pick the people that you interviewed, right? And so if they interview 700 kids and 700 of them say they didn't, he never did anything to them, great. That's great for him. That's how the legal system should work. But I want you to tell me what he was found guilty of.
What he was found guilty of.
What was he found? Three of his peers in court.
counts, 40 something counts of molestation. And I'm telling you that if you promise me you will listen to one episode of our series.
Yeah.
If you just give one episode, I promise you will come back on this show and you will say, Aga, you were right. You didn't waste 4 years of your life. This guy was absolutely railroaded. And, you know, if we had the time, I could convince you here with everyone right now, because this was, it wasn't a conspiracy. It was a perfect storm of self-interest. There were people, starting with the governor and the attorney general, who very much wanted to get, not Sandusky, they didn't care about Sandusky. They wanted to get Graham Spanier, the president of Penn State, and they wanted to get Joe Paterno. They wanted to get them out. They hated them. Spanier is a liberal who supported the Democrat running for governor against Corbett, who became the governor. Corbett hated him. Joe Paterno, Penn State had a great tradition, won two national championships in the 1980s, but they had been bad for a long time by the early 2000s. And Paterno was 82 years old and still the coach at Penn State. The people on the Penn State board, which includes the governor who oversees the board, it also included the CEO of U.S. Steel, John Surma, all wanted Paterno out. And so this became for them an opportunity to get rid of Paterno. They assumed Sandusky had to be guilty, just like all of us, including you, do, just from seeing the numbers. Well, come on, that many kids? He must be guilty.
Let's go back to it. And you know what? We need to start a segment on the WOW just about this case. Because you're right. I think I started to listen to the first episode and didn't finish it. I promise you this. I will go listen. And then we can devote, however many minutes per week. We will call it whatever you want to call the segment, because I don't want an innocent man in jail. But you know what? The 40, a lot of that's going to be hearsay. He did this then and da-da-da-da. But it's the legal system, man. And I'm going to listen to it. We'll talk about it. We'll have an open discussion on it. And I want you to tag the world to it. So we'll get them in listening on this window. And this is going to be one of these points that we would have never got into on the Daily Show. But I'm going to be able to feel very strongly, but not so strong on as an investigator side, that I want an innocent motherfucker in prison. All right. But I'm not saying that all 40 of those are legit, but I'm saying that the DA is not going to bring, I know you're saying they were against him and they want Paterno down and all that. We're talking about Jerry Sandusky. He's the one convicted of 40 counts of molestation. And if even one of them is true, then he's right. He's right where he needs to be. But let's do this. I'll do my homework and we'll set aside, you call it, whatever segment you want to, but set aside 15 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever week, and we'll let the people know that Woody Overton's come back with some hard-ass questions for you, then you can,
Great. And an easy way to do it, easy way to do it would be to align that with episodes of the series. So the first time we do 15 minutes, we'll talk about episode one, blah, blah, blah.
Come up with a name, because this from being in the business, like in commercials, people have to hear, they say on average of 8 times before it's a common thing for them. I want this. I know since I met you, you've always talked about this and you feel very passionate about it, but I don't think there's anything wrong. And that's what the WOW is about, is us being able to sit down and beat each other up. Because you got a totally different viewpoint than I do. And I want to ask you this, and I don't want you to piss off but over the year and a half plus that we've been doing the daily and everything else, you've always, and don't get mad, don't say anything yet. You've always, tended to be on the side of the convicted or alleged pedophiles. And now I'll give you an example. Like you said, Michael Jackson didn't do it in this one. And then the other week, the last week, he was talking about a billionaire, you know, whatever in the cases. And I get that, but let me ask you something. Tell me one pedophile that is convicted that you believe is guilty.
Larry Vassar.
Oh, yeah.
He's the Michigan State U.S. Olympic team doctor. Absolutely guilty.
All right. So you're not totally.
Kevin Spacey.
I would understand guilty. You spend this much time and effort. Y'all did working this case and putting it together. I was thinking last night, I'm like, damn, I would think that you're a little bit jaded, especially as you feel strongly as you do about this case, that you're jaded and rightfully so against anybody that comes out with any allegations. Now you can be like, holy shit, they could be lying to you. Right. So I wanted to get that out there. That's fair enough.
Yeah. I have to be careful because I will see a case and I will see some similarities between it and the Penn State case. And when I see those similarities, you know, my bullshit detector goes off because right. I see the things that can be done that can, the deception that can be pulled, that can control public opinion and pull it in a certain way. But more times than not, these people are guilty, but there are certain commonalities you see. It's like the player on the Dodgers, I forget his name, that got accused, that there were things in that story that that just didn't smell right. There are things in this 91-year-old story that just don't smell right. Now, could be totally wrong on those. The Penn State one happens to be one where we know.
I'm going to interrupt you and say one more thing about it, okay? So I sound out like I'm coming from the investigator standpoint and, you know, all the people I put in Angola for baby raping or kid raping or whatever. But you know what? In my polygraph career, which is over 25 years now, my investigative career, et cetera, do you know I work more sex cases, child rape allegation cases than all other cases put together combined? Do you know how many people I've cleared, right? Because there are a lot of times it is bullshit. And like, let's say, give you an example, mom and daddy split up. And the daughter is teenage years now, and she's staying with mom, but she has to see daddy on the weekend. Well, mom lets the boyfriend spend the night. Daddy doesn't play that game. And so she doesn't want to go to daddy. So she says, allegedly cries out and says, well, daddy touched me. But she knows now it has to be investigated and she doesn't have to go to daddy's house anymore. And I've proved so many, that's just a broad example. And I've proven them wrong and, you know, gotten confessions that they were lying. Okay. So there's 1,000 cases that I've disproved, but there's, you know, a whole lot that I've proved to. And when you talk about commonalities of the cases, it basically breaks down to two types of profiles on child molester, the situational and preferential. And if Sandusky is guilty, he's guilty, he's a preferential offender, and everything that FBI profile has in there, he's hitting like 90% of the checklist. And I know when the situational is like the ice cream man who's riding through the neighborhood and sees a kid, snatches up and rapes him. The preferential is one like the priest or the coach or the teacher use their position of authority to groom their victims because they're smarter, right? And to groom their victims and make the situation happen. So that I will do my part and you name the segment and we'll start touting it on social media. This is a hell of a topic. Everybody's got kids, right? Or we were all kids at one point and stuff like that. But if he's innocent, get him out of jail, right? But he was found guilty by a jury of his peers, 40 counts of molestation. And if you can disprove that, then that's what the appeals process and everything is for. Great. But if you can't, I mean, it's not perfect legal system, but it's the best in the world. say.
Well, I don't disagree. It's the best in the world. But we both also know there are some holes in it. And in this particular case, it just, again, perfect storm of self-interest.
Yep. And always,
have you ever had somebody who was guilty, passed the lie detector test on pedophilia?
I've had... That's a very tricky question, okay? Because when you come in, it's harder to clear someone on a polygraph on a child sex accusation charge than it is murder, okay? Because they're in there, they're already jacked up, their whole life is destroyed. And the false accusations, I mean, I pass them on it all the time and get them cleared, and they get non-processed by the DAs, et cetera. But they're so jacked up when they get in there to begin with, it's called setting your psychological set. I spend hours and hours and hours with them, just breaking them down, getting them comfortable with me. And, you know, I tell them it's the easiest test you're ever going to take, because you're going to help me form the questions. We're going to go over the questions numerous times ahead of time, and there won't be any surprise questions on the test. You know, so I can't say that I've ever had a false positive I'm probably sure I have, but the polygraph is just an investigative tool, right? I made this mistake as a young polygraphist, being the first one for the sheriff's office. And every time they get a case, they just run the motherfucker in my office. I'm like, in the beginning I would do them. And I had a false positive. One of them, a lady who was supposedly kidnapped. Well, she was actually kidnapped from a bank. They got her at her house, and they took her the next morning, got her open the vault, et cetera. And the FBI swore to God to me that the extended time lock wasn't placed on the vault. And they brought her to me. She'd been up for 48 hours. They released her. She'd been up for 48 hours. I should have never tested her on that, but I was a rookie. And then they just gave me this information and I never verified it, right? So that was a false positive on that one. There's a lot of different factors that go into it. And the polygraph, you're only as good as the information that's given to you, but it's not to be an exclusive thing, right?
It's not admissible, right?
It's absolutely. But it is admissible if both sides agree to the expert testimony. And I've had it admitted in civil service hearings and different things like that, but they're never going to agree to it on a criminal case. But the deal being is, I know they happen. I know false positives happen, especially in cases like this, where the person is so jacked up. Like if you were accused of raping your son comes out and says, "Hey, rape me," over numerous times over all these years, even though there's no physical evidence, et cetera. You go in and take a polygraph, you're going to be fucking stressed like fuck, right? But you get so many polygraph examiners that don't have the skill set to bring you down to a level to where if the test is even fair to you. You know, mm-hmm. So my personal recommendation to anyone out there is, if the cops ask you to take a polygraph, tell them to fuck themselves, because it's an interrogation tool. Now, I tell people all the time when they sit down with me, I'm like, hey, if you can pass the test, take it. If you can't pass it, don't take it with me, because you're not going to cheat me. You're not going to beat me. So,
right. Well, most people don't know. So Sandusky took polygraph and passed.
Right. I saw that.
And every single one of the victims changed their story from what their initial story was to the police to what story they told at trial. Every single one of them told a different story at trial than they told the police. And the very last thing I'll just say before we go into this is, have you ever had a case like this where the convicted party is heterosexual and all of the boys who were supposedly raped are all heterosexual? So there's no one is gay in this equation.
But you can't prove that, Mike. They can say it. Nine times out of 10, the pedophiles, they have wives, they have children, they dated girls their whole life. Why? Because one of the preferential pedophiles, because they are putting up that natural appearance. Doesn't mean they don't have the dirty thoughts in their head. Doesn't mean when they're having sex with their wife, they're not thinking about having sex with kids. Okay, mm-hmm. they put on appearances and fronts to, you know, fuck it. If he'd been like, no, I'm openly gay and I like, I have a lean towards young boys, he's not going to say that. Right. Nobody's going to say that. And but you never know what goes on in the head. Just because you're a proven heterosexual that, you know, you have a wife and you have kids, and you date women your entire life, doesn't mean you're not a baby raper.
Okay. Let me ask you something. We both played high school football.
Right.
So we've been 14, 15, 16 years old, full of testosterone playing football. Right. If the 65-year-old gay coach, assuming from what you just said, tried to, these weren't 6 and 8 and 10 year old kids.
Right.
These were 14. One of the kids who got paid here was a 16-year-old. They called Frank the Tank, who weighed nearly 300 pounds. Right. Mm-hmm. So how is it that this guy overpowered you? And it's just no way. Some of the accusations are laughable.
On the preferential side, the offender is so fucking smart. It doesn't mean they're formally educated. It just means they have a high IQ. And that's part of the grooming of the victims. It could be you give them this or you show them this attention that they're not getting home or whatever the fuck over a long period of time where you make the victim actually feel like, that you love them and this should be reciprocated and it should be our secret. This it's okay. This is a natural thing, but you can't tell anyone and stuff like that. There's just too much to go into. So let's make it a
I love this. So we will do it one by one
and we can do it episode by episode. Right.
Yeah, it's great. Let's do it. I love that.
And y'all, this is the wow, right? You're going to get this and the different things. And in fact, this is a hard topic. Nobody wants to talk about child molesters, right? But, you know, it's certainly, you know, if there's an innocent man in prison, then I'm not,
there's a lot to learn,
but if he's
from
guilty,
this case,
if he's
and there's guilty, a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot for, I think parents, you have a lot of officers who listen to the series. I think there's a lot for a bunch of different people to get from this story. So I'm excited to do that with you. Okay. So we have dominated this episode with one story and,
how long
we don't want to do that. So let's move on.
Let's go.
And
I want to do one, Mike.
Okay.
This is a hell of a story. All right. Let's go to Indiana. You ever been to Indiana?
Sure.
All right. I'm thinking outside. Anytime I think of a state, I think about the hunting and the fishing, right? I'm not thinking of Indianapolis or whatever, right? But in Indiana, now, I know you get mad at your kids sometimes, right? You want to slap the shit out of them or punish them or do whatever. Well, this guy took it, you know, he's mad at his son and they had an argument and they're fighting over dirty dishes. Now, look, last night I go in the kitchen and the fucking garbage can is full. That's a pet peeve of mine because when I was a kid, I had 6 brothers and sisters and I took out the garbage like 3 fucking times a day, right? I don't want to have to go in the kitchen and press the small ass garbage can lid full because so the dogs get into it when you have one job, so I'll address that with my son later on. But I'm not going to get into a violent argument over him. And in Indiana, a man got in an argument with his son over dirty dishes in the sink, right? And Timothy Ray Lisby, who's 59 years old, 5 years older, maybe just a couple of years younger than you, Mike, he's got some charges coming down. And I believe these charges should be heavier than they are, but he's got charges of aggravated battery against him, and he's being held without bond in the Marion County. But what happened was this. They started arguing over the dishes, and it's actually with a family friend who witnessed this, and the friend is the same opinion as me that the dad should first face murder charges. You know why? During the argument, he stabbed his son in the heart, right? I mean, that if that doesn't have specific intent to kill, then I don't know what does. So the case has been turned over to the homicide detectives since the battery charge was filed and an investigation is still ongoing. So the friend that was there when the argument took place and the dad stabbed the son in the fucking heart, they called 911 in the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, came out and worked the scene. They found that the son, the younger son, the Lisby's son, had a bleeding wound to his chest, and he was in the living room of the home. Now, his first name was Christopher, and he was rushed to a nearby hospital where he was stabilized after surgery for a lacerated heart. But guess what? The next day, he died. Right?
I was going to say, I've never heard of that, of anyone surviving something like that. Right. I mean, wouldn't you just sort of automatically bleed out?
Evidently they sewed it up, but it was just a little bit too late. Without a shadow of a doubt, they told me if I'd gone another day, I'd have been dead without getting into the hospital. But this kid had the surgery. Evidently they sewed up his heart, but the next day he still died. And
over dirty
dishes. Let's go back to the stabbing. After the friend called for help, he said the father had an oh shit moment, and he realized, I just stabbed my son in the fucking heart. So he starts to try to render first aid to him. He said he was putting pressure on Chris, who's the victim, and saying, don't die, don't die. And now the friend, and rightfully so, the friend has come out and he said, look, I'm going to testify in court. I'm going to testify exactly what I saw, because there was no reason for the dad to stab the son in the heart. And quotations, the friend said, basically the dad put him down. And he said, Chris was my friend. I loved him to death. And this guy's name is Green. He said, I've never seen anyone bleed that bad, and that really hurt me, right? So the dad is due in court on June the 21st, and he's held without bond.
Yeah, so actually he would have been in court on Friday.
Right, on Friday.
So check and see what
of course he's going to plead. I can't imagine him being plead not guilty, but he's going to plead not guilty, and it'll be a process to try to get the charges dropped down. But fuck, you kill your own son over dirty dishes.
And you got an eyewitness to it. And it sounds like maybe when he called 911 the first time, the friend, he didn't really understand, his initial reporting of it didn't match the severity of it, even though he had watched it, which is maybe why the initial charge wasn't a homicide.
I don't think that the normal human being who I've seen the death, I've seen the murder. You got to see a body on the autopsy table with Parrish Forensics, right? One of my good friends of Bruce Hart. But back to the normal person can't comprehend it. But when they arrested him, like they had to that day, I'm sure you have the eyewitness testimony. They arrest him. But guess what? The son was still alive. So that's where the battery charge comes in. And the son was still alive. Now that he's dead, he died, he succumbed to his injuries, they have time, right? He's right. Already
so for that 24-hour period, that was the charge.
He's already under arrest on no bond. They don't have to go arrest him on a warrant for killing his son. Now they're going to take it to the grand jury, get the grand jury to return a true bill of indictment, and that takes out any probable cause hearings or anything else on the murder. So they have time is on their side now. The kid can't get any deader.
God, and the little things with your sons as a father, and it's funny. I'm like you with garbage pails, right? I don't ask them to do many things.
Right.
It's only one day a week that the pails got to go out. Right. How hard is it to put in your calendar that on Tuesday night I got to take the garbage out front, and every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. I'll look out and no one will have done anything with the gun. I mean, it's enough to drive you crazy. I've never stabbed either one of them in their heart, God, that what an overreaction to, and look at the tragedy it turns into.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
I got to do our first animal story. We haven't had an animal story.
Yes.
Yet. And yes. You know how I love moose.
Oh, yeah. Y'all had the shark story. You and I haven't had an animal story yet.
Right. Yes. No, I had the shark nursery story. But we're going to go to Alaska, and a baby moose was saved from what police described as certain demise after it fell into a lake and it like became wedged between one of those float planes, you know, those planes they land on water in Alaska, right, and in a dock last week. Spencer Warren, who works for Destination Alaska Adventure Company, so he does all of these fishing and other wildlife explorations with people pay a shitload of money from warm places to go to Alaska and do these things, right? He's the owner, I guess, of this plane, this seaplane, and he heard a noise that he thought belonged to a bird. And when this is 6:30 last Friday, and when he got to the dock to prepare his float plane for the trip for the day, he noticed the noise wasn't coming from a bird and looked around a corner and saw that there was a baby moose calf stuck between the floats for the plane and the dock there. So being an outdoorsman and understanding everything about Alaska, his first thought was, oh shit, where's the mama?
Exactly. Right? Mama bear. Yeah.
You don't want mama seeing you near the pup or whatever you call a baby moose and thinking you're the one who's causing the trauma on the baby. And he was right to think that, because he turned and about 4 feet away from where the calf was, there was mama with another baby. And so he kept a safe distance until the police could arrive. And then the police used vehicles to create a barrier so that the mother couldn't get at them as they wrestled the baby free. And, they eventually were able to get the calf's legs unlocked from around the float and safely get him back and totally unharmed. The Warren said, you know, he wasn't moving, so it made the rescue a little bit easier. We just lifted him straight out and put him on the dock right there. An officer helped the calf stand up on the boardwalk and watched carefully as it reunited with mom. And, you know, he was just thrilled.
Sorry. Can I say something real quick? They're not little critters. that mama moose weighs way over 1,000 pounds, probably like 1,500 pounds. The babies are like probably 400 to 600 pounds. So it's no little critter. And you don't, it's not on my bucket list is to go kill a moose, because I don't really have any use for it. But those fuckers are huge, dude. I'm talking about like bigger than a vehicle. And shout out to them I think sportsmen or people get a bad rap for hunting, et cetera. But most people are very respectful of animals. And you know, every time I kill something, and I say a prayer and thank you, animal, because I'm going to eat it. Right. And these people really are conservationists. Everything I hunt, I feed them year round. We do food plots. Mm-hmm. They would starve to death. That's why they have hunting season. It's not because just for fun. But shout out to Warren and them for doing that. And I think it's awesome. But, you know, and look, thankfully, the moose live to see another day. And at some point, he'll become an old moose, a big-ass moose like I told you about, and hoping for a proper send-off from this world, right? That the whether it's dispatched by a hunter or, you know, dies of old age or whatever. But when that time comes for a family member, friend, or beloved pet, you know who to turn to. Our good friends, Roy and Kristen and Kristen at Louisiana Funeral Services and Louisiana Pet Crematory. And they'll take care of all your needs. They got a team of professionals experienced in all things, including moose cremation. Maybe not moose
cremation. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, but hey, they have a, you know, you've used services. I know Jim Chapman used services. They have just outstanding facility and all of these things for your furry critter or your pet, whatever it may be. I'm pretty sure not for a moose. But they're awesome, and they take care of every phase. So whether it's a full traditional service and burial, a cremation, or a service and cremation for a beloved family, pet, or critter, they've got you covered, y'all. And I know this. We've been there. These are our people.
That was a great segue. What an unbelievable segue. So, folks, you know what to do. You can drive into Broussard and look for that big American flag, or you can go to lafuneralservices.com or lapetcrematory.com. And Roy, Kristen will treat you like family because they treat us like family because they are family. So remember, rest
easy. Right. And let me tell you something else. We talked to Roy about this briefly. And there's been some stories, as there are occasionally, there are stories about funeral homes, et cetera. You saw the one recently where the lady, they sent her to the funeral home and getting ready in a bomber. And
she was alive. Still.
Yeah. So we need to get Roy. We need to have a segment with Roy when these crazy ass stories come up. We can call him on the phone and say, Roy, tell us what you think about this. y'all, for real, they're like legit down to earth people. And when you see a cop normally, if you have an interaction with a cop, you're having a bad day. If you have an interaction with them, unfortunately, it's going to be at a bad time of your life, because a loved one you've lost, but they take care of you. And that's why they're so successful, and they have a beautiful facility and everything else. And they're good people, and they're friends. So
they're really good people.
Can't say they're enough. Really good people. And a lot of lifers have used them. And if I died in the hospital last week, I had already told Cindy and said, that's where I want to go. So I believe in them, and we thank them for believing in us.
Awesome. Well, I want to end with one final story for Monday.
All right.
I'm really curious to get your take on this story, Woody. This takes place up in the Seattle area. So a Washington State Uber driver allegedly raped and kidnapped a drunk passenger before the rider's father and friends came to the rescue. Okay. So, Ahmed Ali is the name of the Uber driver. And he picks up this woman. She'd been out drinking with friends at a bar in Olympia, Washington, the capital of the state of Washington. And this is last Saturday night. A friend, of the victim had to, order the car for her because she had had too much to drink, and they wanted to make sure that she got home safely. So that friend actually watched her get into the Uber at 12:17 a.m. And then they went back into the bar and joined their other friends. But instead of driving the girl right home, which was about 12 minutes from the pickup point, Ali took advantage of the situation, and he used the Uber app to make it look like he had dropped her off at the proper destination. So he goes to that spot, he stops the clock on it and makes it look like he's been paid there and he's dropped her off, but he doesn't do that. He continues on. And so he drives her pretty long distance, like an hour outside of Seattle, to this fishing spot on the Nisqually River, which I guess is well known in those parts. But while this was happening, the friends are arriving back at her house. I guess they live together in this house. So this is about 30 minutes after she had been picked up. So now you're at like 12:45. Well, they're expecting her to be in bed. they look and she's not in her bed. They're calling out for her. They're trying her phone. They're getting nothing. And so they decide to call her father. And her father's got that Life 360 app on his phone where he can track his daughter's location. And so he goes on the app, and what do you know? His daughter is not at home. She's down at this fishing spot on the Nisqually River. And so he urgently heads to that location and gives that location to the friends and has several family members with him. Well, they arrive, and as they arrive, the girl is naked in the back of the Uber being sexually assaulted by this guy, Ahmad Ali, the Uber driver. He sees them, so he pulls up his pants quickly and he scrambles into the front of the car to try to drive away, but they get to him in time and wrestle him away from the driver's seat and proceed to beat the living shit out of him. Somehow during the altercation, the father takes a gun out and shoots at him, but misses. He takes two shots at him, but misses. Officials later find two shell casings in the area as the investigation begins. But later, a sheriff's deputy pulled over the Uber driver's car. So this guy, they let this guy go after they beat the crap out of him.
Yeah.
But I guess he's driving so erratically that a sheriff's deputy pulls him over, sees how injured he is and how much he's bleeding, and brings him to the hospital. The guy's fighting the whole way, saying he doesn't need medical assistance. Deputies, you know, get the whole story from the victim's family. It comes out, and they take her blood alcohol level. She was more than double the legal limits. Similar law exists in Washington as exists in Louisiana, where if you're over the legal limit, you can't consent. Not that at this point there should have been any argument over whether she consented to anything. The Life 360 app her father used to track her showed that the victim's phone had been on the move for 23 minutes and had passed the drop-off point. So, I mean, they had all the GPS information. They know exactly where this guy went. They know that he turned off the app at her exact location that she was supposed to be dropped off on. And so, I mean, this thing is locked pretty darn tightly. But the thing that I looked for like crazy on this story is anything involving any charges against the father who took shots at this guy. And there's nothing. I don't see anything.
They can always come back and charge him later if they wanted to, but nobody, if you were on that jury, your daughter was, this guy's daughter is being raped and you fire a couple shots at him, you didn't hit him. I mean, he may have pistol whipped him, which is when you slap him in the head and pull the trigger at the same time, make the ears ring, right? That I'm not going to find him guilty. The cops probably are never going to charge him with anything. This guy's going to plead down to whatever. Here's the real caveat in the story is that they found her, right? Because what are you going to do? And let's go back to what we were talking about Sandusky earlier. There's preferential and situational offenders. This guy's situational. Right. Mm-hmm. Probably not the first time he's done it. He gets a lone female shit face in the back of his Uber. And he's like, I got your ass now. I'm a go drive you to your location, act like I dropped you off, and then I'm taking your ass out there. Right? And it was, I'm a rapey. I'm telling you right now, he probably would have murdered her and put her body in the water. So she's lucky to be alive. The dad not getting charged. I mean, fuck it. If they charge him, then he's not going to get found guilty. I wouldn't vote for him to be found guilty. I don't think anybody would. And then you got, he said, you got a rapist saying, well, he shot at me twice. And all the dad's got to say is, you know, fuck it. I just fired my gun in air twice. And he's got his whole family to back him up. So that's a waste of time, mm-hmm. waste of taxpayer dollars. Fuck that rapist. I mean, he should have shot
well,
him.
Well, and
when you rape, you pull up and he's raping your baby girl. I probably would have. I'd have lost my Jesus. I'd have shot.
Oh, absolutely! It's a scary thing that, because if you think about it, the guy's got a built-in alibi. If the Life 360 app isn't with the dad, he's got his alibi. He shows. He timed out. He was at that exact location. She was gone. Now he would have needed to get rid of her phone so she couldn't be tracked. It seems like something that somebody's probably gotten away with before.
I was about to say he's done this before. They're going to come back. They're going to probably pin some bodies on him, especially, I don't know. Generally, they'll drop the bodies off in the same geographical area, but why would you drive 30 some minutes out of the way to a secluded parking area that's on the water? So it's easy to get rid of a body. Yep. That's a running river. That body's going to go way down river. They're not going to know where it got put in at. So fuck him. And I'm glad that he got an ass whipping. Yeah. And he's going to get his in prison. He's going to have more bodies on him.
If you were on this case, would you go looking for unsolved with a similar bodies that washed up in a river?
I would get this cat's DNA. I'd go every homicide victim that you have that's unsolved, that there's DNA in the case. I'd run it against that in the CODA system. I would look for Jane Doe's. I would look for, obviously he's taking victims that are it's a crime of opportunity, right? And he may have started with streetwalkers, high risk victims or whatever. You don't start out doing that. So he's done it. He's done it before. I also when this news story breaks, probably other women who were intoxicated, then he may have raped or attempted to rape because they progressed. These situations progress. They're not the smartest of people. He attempted a rape and he got away with it because they were so shit-faced they can't remember. I would look for more victims to come forward and say, hey, this guy did it to me too, right?
Well, that's true. And they could go after Uber for their records with this driver and see if any of those prior pickups were deceased.
But he could have done, if he was smart, I guess that's how it works on that, but he could have picked them up and just turned it off or said, showed up with his little Uber sticker, had him get in, whatever. I don't know how it all works, but they're going to dig into it. They're not done with him yet. At least I hope they wouldn't be.
Yeah. Well, I thought you'd have some really good perspective on that, and you did. So awesome. I'm really excited that we're going to do this little exploration into the Penn State story, because I'm really anxious to get your feedback, and let's
set it for however long on Mondays. We'll run it on Mondays. You name the segment, and this is what's different from the Daily Show and everything else. And I'll tell you exactly what the fuck I think, right? I know it way more intimately than I do, and we'll see what it plays out to.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Woody. Thank you, folks. Remember, tell your friends, share all that good podcaster stuff that we are supposed to say, and we will talk back at you on Friday. Remember to, if you didn't get a chance to go back and listen to that Life Real Crime original episode that Woody dropped on Saturday to hear the first part of his adventure. Again, welcome back, Woody. Thrilled to have you here, and we'll talk to you again on Friday.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Hey, we love all y'all, each and every one of you. I love you more now than I ever loved you, right? So see you on Friday. Peace.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.